Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Nun Amud Bet by the two dots. The Gemara here is discussing the line in the Mishnah that tells us that there is a time limit for the buyer in which he is allowed to annul the transaction or ask for the overcharging back. The Mishnah told us that threshold is ad shiyareh litagar olikrovo, until he has sufficient time to show it to an expert or to his relative. Along comes Rav Nachman over here and qualifies that statement. Amar Rav Nachman, Loshanu elolokeach. That threshold or that window of time is only a limit for the buyer. Ava mocher neolam chozer. But with regards to the seller, he has a right of retraction forever. As Rashi notes over here, the difference between the buyer and the seller is in who is in possession of the merchandise. Now, the buyer who is in possession of the merchandise has the ability to go around, show the merchandise, assess the price that he paid vis-a-vis what the market price is, and therefore he has a shorter window of opportunity to deal with that because he can deal with it. On the other hand, the mocher, who doesn't have the object in hand, he can't go around and try to assess the value because he doesn't have the object in order to do that. Therefore, it takes him more time, or we give him a larger window of opportunity to annul the sale because the information comes to him in a much slower manner, and he also has to create comparisons between products and different merchandise, and therefore we give him a larger window of opportunity, or according to Rav Nachman, that is, lo'olam chozer. He always has that right of retraction. Rashi over here already notes that that is limited, or qualifies from Nachman's statement to say that hilkach lo'olam chozer im lo nityakru talitot bentayim. His right to annul the transaction is only if the market price has not changed in the interim. If the market price has appreciated since that point in time, that is the cutoff for the seller to annul the transaction or ask for the ona'ah back. The reason being that once the price is moved, first of all, if they annul the transaction, the buyer has no ability to replace the object in the market at the price that was available at the time that they transacted. Number two is we also have suspicions now that the seller has a vested interest in annulling the transaction because the price has gone up, and therefore he wants to fetch the higher price. So there is a threshold. When we say l'olam chozer, that assumes that the price is still at the same price as the original transaction. Once it's appreciated from that point in time, he no longer has that right of retraction. The Gemara says that our Mishnah seemingly supports this distinction that Rav Nachman makes because name of Mesaile, Chazru the Divrei Chachamim. In the Mishnah, it says that the Tagrei Lod went back to the position of the Chachamim after they were informed by Rabbi Tarfon that his position that increased the threshold by which Ona'ah is considered to one-third versus the Chachamim's one-sixth, but he also opened up the window in which the buyer has a right of retraction from being Kedei She'areh the Tagar L'Kovo to Kol Hayom, all day. Now, if you say, Yamart Bishlama Mocher L'Olam Chozer, that the Mocher always has a right of retraction, Shem Hachi Chazru, that's why they wanted to go back to the position of the Chachamim. Because as far as they were concerned as sellers, they always had the right of retraction. The only difference between the Chachamim, Rabbi Tarfon, is in the position of the lokeach, whether the buyer has a right of retraction just limited to Kedei She'areh L'Tagar L'Kovo, or according to Rabbi Tarfon, now expanded to Kol Hayom. And therefore they said, we'd rather go back to the position of the Chachamim, and no thanks, Rabbi Tarfon, for your one-third threshold, because it's hurting us when you open up the window of time in which the buyer can retract the sale. So therefore, they went back to the position of Chachamim to limit the position of the lokeach to that he can only annul the sale in Kedei She'areh L'Tagar or the Krovo. Ela Iyamart, Mocher Nami Kelokeach Dami. If you say to us that a Mocher and a lokeach are under the same threshold of time, Mainaf Kluhu Mina, then why are they upset with the position of Rabbi Tarfon? Because Rabbi Tarfon, when expanding the window from Kedei She'areh L'Tagar L'Kovo to all day, he's not only expanding it for the buyers, he's also expanding it for the sellers. Kehechi de Avdi le Rabbanan takanta lelokeach, just like the Rabbanan instituted this for the protection of the buyer, hachinami Avdi le Rabbanan takanta lemocher. So too, they provided the same protection to the seller. And therefore, if you're expanding the window of time, you're equally expanding it for the buyer as well as the seller. And if that's the case, the Tagrei Lod benefited from that expansion in time, that if they sold it too cheap, Now they have a longer window to retract the sale, just like the buyer gets that additional benefit. So what the Gemara wants to prove from this is that it must be in our Mishnah that the Lokeach and Mocher are on different time windows. The Mocher always has the right of retraction. It was the shift in the opportunity for the Lokeach that is being discussed by the Rabbanon and Rabbi Tarfon, and that did disadvantage the Targ Reilod when you expanded the buyer's ability to retract the sale. Now, even though, as Tosafot points out on the previous Amud, the Targ Reilod were both buyers and sellers, that in our scenario, they're selling to the people, but they had to buy their merchandise originally in order to sell it. So when Rabbi Tarfon expanded the window for the buyers, yes, he expanded for the buyers from the Targ Reilod, but he also expanded the window for the Targ Reilod themselves when they were buying from their suppliers. So Tosafot says there's a big difference because the Targ Reilod are buying wholesale and selling retail. So they only have one transaction in which they bought in terms of the wholesaler to this middleman because of the fact that they buy in large quantities. On the other hand, when they're selling retail, they're dealing with numerous buyers when they break it down into smaller parts and sell it off. So the Targ Reilod had a vested interest in having their buyers, meaning the ones who are buying from them, locked in because they have so many buyers, versus the advantage it would give them when they were just buying once from the large suppliers at the wholesale level. And so therefore, even though they are buyers, they are much more limited in their buying because they only have one transaction versus the numerous transactions when they're selling. And to them, again, we mentioned this yesterday, the key element is locking the sale. All they want, or the most important thing to them, is that the sale is done, because then they know that they've got the product out and they've made the money. Whether the ona gets returned or not is less important to them, but more important is that the lock on the sale. And that's why they went back to the sheet of Rabbi Tarfon. Gemara says that may not be the case because Targ Reilod lo shchiach dita'u. The Targ Reilod didn't often make a mistake, meaning that they were experts in pricing. That was their job. That was their business, was trading. And therefore they knew the pricing. So even if you argue that the Lokeach and the Mocher are on the same time frame or same window, there wasn't necessarily a benefit to the Targ Reilod in Rabbi Tarfon's expansion of the window because they were not beneficiaries of that since they were experts in pricing. So even if you say that the benefit afforded by Rabbi Tarfon was equally given to the Lokeach and the Mocher, nevertheless, the Targ Reilod weren't interested in the aspect of the time period being expanded for the Mocher, because lo shchiach dita'u, that they were not often wrong about pricing. They were experts in pricing. So to them, again, it was more important that the sale get locked in than that they were given this wider window of opportunity. Because for them, the window of opportunity to back out of the sale when they sold it for too little was a rare occurrence, given their expertise. And therefore, they were very much focused on the Lokeach's window, not on the Mocher's window. And if that's the case, then you can't prove anything from our Mishnah, because it might be that Rabbi Tarfon was giving the same rights to the buyers and sellers. Nevertheless, the Targ Reilod were not interested in the rights given to the sellers because it did not benefit them. And therefore, they rejected Rabbi Tarfon, went back to the Chachamim in order to limit the position of the buyer. Now, even though in the Hava Mina, we assume that the Targ Reilod were also not experts, and the answer is that they're experts. But in the Hava Mina, we thought they weren't experts. Then why were they so happy when Rabbi Tarfon then expanded the threshold for Ona'ah up to a third, and then they got upset when he came back and said that it was an expanded window of opportunity? The answer would be that, again, as we noted before, that their vested interest was in the king of the sale. So even though at first where we thought they weren't experts, and therefore they were equal beneficiaries of expanding the threshold to one third because that made that the transaction would stand for a larger number of transactions. So even though they weren't experts and it might disadvantage them because sometimes they also undersold the price and they were selling at a discount, nevertheless, it was to their advantage overall because according to Rabbi Tarfon, by expanding the window of Ona'ah from 1/6 to 1/3 would guarantee that more transactions were final. And again, that's their biggest invested interest here. But then when Rabbi Tarfon then said that the window was expanded to a full day, that offset the benefit of the expanded threshold of Ona'ah up to a third, by now allowing the buyer to retract the sale for the entire day. And that's why they were upset. And again, the Gemara then answered, even though it gave them a similar benefit, nevertheless, because they were experts, that benefit did not really lean in their favor, especially given the fact that they want the sale to be final, and that's their biggest and vested interest over here. Ushbizichne de Rami Bar Chama, the host, the bed and breakfast in which Rami Bar Chama was staying, Zavin Chamra, he sold, whether it's a donkey or wine, Vita'a. When he sold it, he underpriced it, and he made a mistake. Ashtachay Dhava Atziv, Rami Bar Chama found his host, and he saw that he was upset, that he was distraught. Malaya Mayatzivat, why are you so upset? I sold this donkey or this wine and I made a mistake in the pricing. Go back and retract the sale. You have a right now, because of the ona'ah or the fact that you undercharged for it, to go now and retract the sale. Says the problem is that the time elapsement from the time that I sold it until now is larger than what is mentioned in the Mishnah, which is the amount of time to show it to an expert or to a relative. Shadre the Kamei to Rav Nachman. So then he sent them to Rav Nachman to determine what he should do in the case. Amalei, lo shanu el lokeach. That's only true with the buyer. Ava mocher leolam chuzer. But the seller always has a right of retraction. This is Rav Nachman l'shitato, who mentioned before this qualification, that the limitation in the Mishnah is solely applicable to the buyer and not to the seller. Therefore, Rav Nachman paskens here for the seller that he has a right of retraction even past the point of Kedei Shireh LeTagar Olikrovo. My time. What is the reason that there should be such a distinction between the buyer and the seller? Lokeach Mekchal B'yado. As we mentioned before in Rashi, that the buyer has the object in hand. Kohechi De'azil Mechavile. Anywhere he goes, he can show it to people and get an assessment of what the real value is. And then people can tell him whether he paid the right price or he didn't pay the right price. On the other hand, the seller who does not have the object in hand anymore, until he gets a similar object or a similar piece of merchandise, and then he knows, then he's aware or made aware of the fact as to whether he made the mistake or not, then, only then, does he discover that information. I mean, that he needs much more time for the discovery of that information. We're actually not even sure when he will find it out, because he may never get the exact same object. So it might be an accumulation of data that gives him the information to realize that he had underpriced the object. Therefore, we give him that much larger window of opportunity in order to assess whether it was a fair sale. Again, with the limitations that Rashi noted before, as long as the market price has not appreciated in the interim. There was this individual who was selling varshiche. As Rashi notes over here, they are kshirei meshi. They are seemingly strips of silk or fine wool. Shekorim bindles, a bindle or a belt. So he was selling these, whether it's scarves or belts of silk, fine wool. Vizvune, he was out there selling them in the market. Kare shita. He was calling out that he's willing to sell them for six. Bishav Yechamsho. Their true value, or their underhand value, was five. Vihavu Yovi Lechamshu Palgo. His offer price was six. But we know that if you offer him 5.5, Havashoko, he would have taken it. So basically, the bid ask here is the true value is five. The offer price is six. If you pay him in the mid range, which is 5.5, he would have accepted it. Atu Gavra. So an individual who was smart came along and said, if I give him 5.5 for this, that's less than 1/6. It will not be considered an ona'ah. This transaction will stand, and it'll be a mechila, as if I waived my right because of that excess that I paid above the far market price from 5.5 over the 5 value. So what I will do is, etein leshita, I'll overpay him. I'll give him his ask price of 6, but ve'ledino. And then I'll bring him to court and demand my ona'ah back. And therefore, the transaction will work in my favor, because now I only pay 5 instead of 5.5. Ata the kamei d'rabba. So he did exactly that. And then they brought the case before Rabba. Amalei lo shanu elo b'lokeach min ha'tagar. That's only true when you're buying from an expert or a retailer. Aval lokeach mi balabayit ein lo alav una'a. But when you buy from somebody who is a quote-unquote household seller, there is no limitation on the ona'a, meaning that ona'a is only applicable in commercial business settings. When it is a private sale, especially when it is an individual selling their possessions, over there, there's no din of ona'a. And we're going to see in a second in the Gemara why that is the case. But as Rashi notes over here, because tachshitin uklei tamish tashmish lo chavivin alav, his personal belongings are very beloved to him, veinu machran el beyoker, and therefore, because of the sentimental value or the personal connection to these objects, he will only sell them at a significant price or margin above the normal market price. V'havelei kimifarish. It's as if he explicitly says in the sale, yodeanish yesh bo'ona'a, that I know that there's ona'a here, or I'm making you aware of the fact that it's ona'a here because you're buying from a ba'al ha'bayit. When you buy from a retailer, when you buy from the marketplace, you know that these prices are being vetted by all the people that are there, and you assume that you're getting a fair price. But when you go and buy it in a private sale from a private individual, that may not be the case, especially given his attachment to his personal belongings, and therefore you have to assume that there will be a premium paid for the object. And it's as if he explicitly stated to you that there is ona'a over here, and you are waiving your right to make a claim on that ona'a. Now over here, when we say ein ona'a l'balabayit, the question is, how far does that go? So there are rishonim who say that that is capped out at bitul mekach, which means that up to a shtut, there is no ona'a for the balabayit. But if he exceeds a shtut, over there is bitul mekach, even by the balabayit. Again, similar to what the Balei HaTosafot said yesterday, the price is so egregious, it's as if the sale never took place or shouldn't be upheld because of the fact that the price far exceeds what would be the norm. On the other hand, there are rishonim who say that for the balabayit, ein ona'a, literally means this, ein ona'a, which means that both if he charges a shtut, or even more than a shtut, there is no ona'a, because the sale price is very subjective in these cases, and therefore whatever the price is, that is considered to be the quote-unquote market price for the baal habayit to sell his personal belongings. In addition to that, the way that we're phrasing it and looking at it now, it would indicate that when we say ein ona'a lebaal habayit, that's only when he is in a position of selling. That means that if he sells for a premium to the market price, that's considered to be fair. On the other hand, if the buyer buys it at a discount from him, then maybe there would still be ona'a, because then you can't give the reason that we explained over here. On the other hand, the Ramban says that it's a two-way street, because the baal habayit sometimes also wants to rid himself of certain assets, and he is willing to discount them to the market in order to sell them out or to bring liquidity to his situation. And therefore, since he knows his possessions well, and he knows what he wants to monetize them for, he believes, the Ramban, that in ona'a the baal habayit applies in a bidirectional manner. That is, whether he overcharges or whether he undercharges for it, there's still no ona'a over here because of the idea that the baal habayit, who is very familiar with his objects, might have personal reasons for either asking for a premium because of his connection to the object or giving a discount because he wants to rid himself of this asset or monetize the asset. And therefore, over here, Rava paskined that the individual was not entitled to get the ona'a back. How gavra, davenoket kefe lizvune, he was carrying around these rings, earrings, nose rings to sell. Kare shitin v'shavi chamshin. He was calling out that they were for sale for 60, but their underlying or true value was 50. Ihavu yovele chamshin v'chamsho. If you gave him 55, havashokel, he would have taken it. So it's the same as the case that we saw before with the Varshechei. It's just the price is multiplied by 10. The bid is the market price, 50. The offer price that he's asking for out there is 60, and he's willing to take 55. Atu gapro. So again here, somebody who was wise to the lacha came along, v'amar. If I give him 55, then it'll be a mechila, because then the amount that he charged over the market price is less than 1/6. And then that's mechila, and then I have no right to get that overcharging back. I'll give him his ask price of 60. Vedvedadino, and then I'll bring him to court and ask him for the return of the ona'ah, which is now 1/6, if you measure it by the ma'ot. After the kamei de Rav Chisda, then the case was brought before Rav Chisda. Similar to what we saw with Rava before, Rav Chisda also over here has the same psak, that the inyan of ona'ah is only applicable to a merchant. When you buy from a private owner, there is no ona'ah in those cases, similar to the explanation that we gave before in the previous case, and therefore he wasn't entitled to any refund of the overcharged amount. Amarle Rav Dimi, so Rav Dimi says, Yashar, that's the right way. What you're paskining is correct. And so to Rav Elazar says, Yashar, that you did the right thing. Now, over here you can see in the Mesorot HaShas, he says that if you look in other places in Shas, when you have Amuraim that are saying this type of phrase, it's actually spelt in the Gemara, Yud Yud Shin Resh, which would mean that the proper pronunciation is not Yashar, but rather Yasher. And so therefore, this has nafkaminot, quote unquote, la halacha, which is that when someone gets an aliyah in shul, or when someone does something and you are offering them a yasher koach, whether the proper pronunciation is yasher kochacha, like we have here, the word yashar is given, or whether it is yi yasher kochacha. And the difference in translation would be yasher kochacha, that your strength is straight, versus yi yasher kochacha, which means that your strength should be straightened. Now, the Gemara says, both to that sack of Rovo and to Rav Chisda, there seems to be a problem. We have a Mishnah that explicitly states, Kishem sha'una'ah lehejot, kach ona'ah l'tagar. Just like there is ona'ah for a layperson, so too is there ona'ah for a merchant. So, man hejot, who is the hejot? If you're looking in relationship to a tagar, a merchant, then a hejot, lav balabait, isn't that the balabait? Isn't that the individual or private seller? Am Rav Chisda b'tzadraita. That is with regards to particular items. As Rashi notes over here, b'tzadraita bing de kanvus homdim li macher. This is a home business that the balabait is running. So when he is selling, maybe he's not a merchant, maybe he's not a storekeeper, but in the meantime, he's selling something out of his house, and the items that are being made or being purchased are for the purpose of sale. Avamani tashmishtei, when you're talking about his personal utensils and kelim, the yakre ale, that are very precious to him, lo mizavin lehu ila b'dmei yateri. He won't sell them except with a premium to the price. So therefore, you have to differentiate between the objects that the balabait is selling as to whether it's subject to ona'ah. If he's selling his personal items, then there is no din of ona'ah. According to some, as we noted before, like the Ramban, that means both for underpricing and overpricing. But according to others, that just means for the overpricing, because the value of the object has sentimental value. He has a personal connection to the object, and therefore the subjective market price for him is in excess of the true market price, because he doesn't want to part with these items. According to the Ramban, maybe he does want to part with them, and therefore he's willing to discount the price. But when it comes to objects that he is making for sale, or acquiring for sale, then he's no different than a merchant. And over there, the market price should dictate what he's charging. There shouldn't be any excess charge just because he's a balabait who's selling rather than a tagar. And so the application of this upcoming Mishnah is in a case when we're dealing with items that are not personal items that he is selling. Now the next Mishnah begins. Echad lokeach v'echad mocher. Whether it is the buyer or the seller, yesh lahem ona'ah. The application of ona'ah is relevant. Doesn't matter whether the buyer was overcharged or the seller sold at a discount. Kashem she'ona'ah lehejot, kach ona'ah letagar. And similarly, just like there's ona'ah by lay people, there is also ona'ah by tagar, by merchant. That's the quote from the Mishnah that we just mentioned in the previous Gemara. Rav Yehuda Omer, ain ona'ah letagar. When it comes to merchants, there is no ona'ah. The reason being, and it makes sense, is that these individuals are experts in pricing. They are involved in the market all the time. They are aware of the market price. And therefore, their decision to discount vis-a-vis the market price, we'll see in the Gemara, is an active decision which they are comfortable with. And therefore, there is no ona'ah in that case. Whereas for the buyer, who is not as well versed in the pricing, for him, if he gets overcharged, there will be ona'ah. Mishu hutalalav yado'el yona. The person who is aggrieved has the upper hand. Ratza Omer lo tenli ma'utai. He has the option then to say, give me back my money. O tenli masha anitani. Or give me back the overcharging that was done here. He has a right to either uphold the transaction and demand the excess charge be given back to him, or he can annul the sale completely. He has the upper hand. We discussed this in the Balei Tosafot at the end of yesterday, and we'll see further in the Gemara why this is supportive of that position of the Balei Tosafot. Mena hanei mile. How do we know that the issue of ona'ah is equally applicable both to the buyer and the seller? Because the pasuk says, v'chi timgru memkar la'amitecha al tonu, that when you sell something to your friend, do not have ona'ah there, meaning do not overcharge them. Eni elish nitan elokeach. That would only imply that there's a problem of ona'ah when the seller is overcharging. Nitane mocher. How do I know that if the seller was selling it at a discount, meaning that the buyer bought it at a cheaper than market price, minayin, how do I know that that's also subject to the din of ona'ah? Tamalomar, okano al tonu. So the pasuk reads, v'chitimkum emkar la'amitecha, okano miyad amitecha al tonu. And so the way the Gemara is reading is that the altonu is modifying the two pieces of the pasuk, both the timkor memkar lamitecha, as well as the kono, the buyer miyad amitecha. And both of them are subject to ona'ah, and both of them are protected by that which is mentioned in the pasuk. Now, even though the pashtut of pasuk is speaking about karka, and the next pasuk and the subsequent pasukim speak about not selling property without anchoring it in the number of years to the yovel when the property will be returned. So you have to set the lease rate at the number of years left to the yovel. So there, if you are cheating by either overcharging or undercharging, the Torah warns you not to do that. So even though the subsequent psukim are speaking about karka, the chachamim darshaned this particular pasuk that opens up that parshia to reference to sales of merchandise. And therefore the Gemara goes over here to explain how that pasuk itself, embedded in it, is both sides of the transaction, and the necessity for there not to be ona'ah, not from the buyer's perspective, nor from the seller's perspective. V'itzrich. And I need the pasuk to tell me both of these items. V'itzrich l'michtav lokeach, v'itzrich l'michtav mocher. I need the pasuk to tell me both the information about the buyer and the seller. Ge'ita rachman mocher. Had the Torah only specified that there's ona'ah with regards to the mocher, v'shum dekimle v'zvinatei. Because he is well versed in that which he has here, meaning that he knows the price that he bought it at, and therefore he knows when he's selling it that he's taking excess above what he is entitled to on a market basis for this object. Since he is well versed in the item, he knows how much he paid for it, therefore he's subject to ona'ah and not allowing him to overcharge for the item. And even though it might be that he purchased the item a number of days ago or weeks ago or months ago, still he knows what the underlying cost of the item is for him. And he knows now when he is selling it, whether he's making money or not making money on the purchase price vis-a-vis where he's selling it today. So that awareness makes him more responsible to ensure that he's giving the market price and not overcharging. And for the buyer who has uncertainty because he doesn't know how much it was bought for, nor does he have any sense if he's going to sell it on how much he's going to garner for it after he purchases it. So therefore, he might need to get a lower rate or a discount to ensure that he earns a margin on this item. And for that reason, maybe the lokeach is not subject to ona'ah if he's buying things at a discount. Av lokeach, the lokim le bizvinate, im alo. Maybe he isn't subject to it. Azarei rachmana below tonu. Therefore, the Torah specified that even the buyer has to be careful not to underpay for things that are at a higher market price. If the Torah only warned that the buyer may not underpay, because he is buying the object, because there is this saying, this colloquialism, inish zvanit kanita. If you buy something, you've got something. But the seller who is losing, because of this saying or this colloquialism, zavin ovid, the one who sells loses. Therefore, ema lo azarei rachmana below tonu. I would think maybe he's not subject to the iser vona. Tzricho. That's why I need the Torah to specify both the buyer and seller are subject to the din of ona'a. The idea being that when you purchase something, when you put out the money, you've lost the money, but you have the utility of the object that will stay with you. And so therefore, the price is forgotten and the quality is remembered, or the price is forgotten and the utility brings you that benefit. So you would think that the reason that the lokeach cannot undercharge is because he really gets benefit from the utility of the item afterwards, and he therefore should be paying the fair market price for it. On the other hand, the seller, he has left only with cash and no longer has utility. Now again, they didn't view in those days this idea that cash was a way to save money or deposit money. The way to have safety deposits or bank accounts was to buy land or to buy objects that had utility. There was no idea of just accumulating money for the wealth that it bestowed upon the person and allowed them to buy in the future or do in the future. It was that you had to expend the money to get utility out of the money. The money itself had no utility. And therefore, a person who sells an object and just has cash in their hand, what the Gemara says is in the end, the person will expend the cash or the money will get lost on spent on other things, and then the seller is left with nothing. So therefore, maybe the seller is given a right to charge a little more because of the fact that he's only going to be left with his cash and he doesn't have utility anymore. So we have to give him more in order that he doesn't lose it all or that he has an ability to do something with the money besides the depreciation of him holding onto cash vis-a-vis something that has utility. Sricha, that's why I need the Torah to specify both the buyer and seller are subject to the din of ona'a. We show him over here a question, what exactly, when the Gemara says here, we're speaking about a mocher. Who is this mocher that loses in the sale? If you're talking about a tagar, a merchant, then getting liquid and getting cash is actually to his benefit because that's his whole business, which is buying and selling. And therefore, you can't argue when he sells the object, he loses because he has cash in hand. On the other hand, if you're speaking about a balabayit, we said already before that there is no ona'a vis-a-vis a balabayit. So the ritva over here says that it must be talking about a balabayit bitzraraita. That is a balabayit who is a merchant, because we saw before that even a balabayit is subject to ona'a when he's selling merchandise as a commercial entity rather than as a private seller of his private utensils. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ain ona'a the tagar. Rabbi Yehuda believes that the din of ona'a does not apply to expert merchants. So Gemara says, Mishum tuhu tagar ain lo ona'a. Just because he's a merchant, he doesn't have rights to be protected, so that he doesn't get underpaid for something. We're not talking about here a retailer that is selling merchandise over a period of time. However, we're talking about a middleman, someone who is buying and selling on a continuous basis, and that he doesn't really hold on to any of the merchandise, so he is usually selling and buying on the same day. He is just extracting or taking from the wholesalers and then selling it out in quantities to the retailers, but his buys and sales are very close together. My time, midayoda zvinte kamashavya. So over there, we would think he is well aware of the price or the value of the merchandise that he's selling because he just bought it. Vachule achil gabe, and he's discounting it because he wants to move the merchandise. Behind the zavna achi, and so why is he discounting it or willing to take below market price? Mishum ditramile zvinte achrite. Because now something else has become available to him and he wants liquidity. To him, it's more important not to be left holding the merchandise. So for instance, at the end of the day, he might sell things at a discount because he doesn't want to be left holding merchandise overnight. He wants to be liquid so that he can invest or he can buy the next morning. But the same thing intraday. If he sees there's another opportunity and needs liquidity, he may be willing to discount the price on these objects to get liquidity in order to invest in something else. And the only reason now he's coming back to claim the ona'a is v'hashta miha kahadarbe. Now he changed his mind, or he didn't get the other opportunity, and now he wants to retract the discount. So it's really a seller's regret. At the time that he sold it, he was well aware of it, and he was willing to give the discount. After the fact, things changed, and now he wants to go back and unlock the transaction and say, oh, I was cheated out of the money. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says about such an individual who's well aware of the pricing, if they are discounting the price, then they're doing it intentionally, and they can't ask for the ona'a or the undercharging to be made up to them because they knew at the time that they sold it that that was the price that they were giving and willing to discount it at. Now, as the Balei HaTosafot point out, that's really only unidirectional. That only means that ein ona'a the tagar is only when he's in a situation in which he is discounting the item. But if he is the one purchasing the item, what do we say there that ain't ona'a the tagar if he overpays for it? Because over there you don't have this same reasoning, which is he's overpaying for it because he needs liquidity. Over there, he's expending the money. Over there, it seems like that there should be onah for the Targar when he is in a purchase mode. The Rashash argues that even in that situation, it could be that he has a ready buyer on the other side. He has a buyer who's told him, I want you to source this for me, and therefore he's willing to pay a premium to get it because he knows that he has a buyer on the other side. So a Targar, especially this type of middleman, is always looking for situations to match up buyers and sellers. And since that's the case, he knows or is well aware of the market price. And if he overpays or undersells it, that's his business decision because of liquidity or because of who he wants to service at the time. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there is no ona'ah for the tagar, for the businessman. Now, in this context, you have to ask, what is the position of the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda and say that even for a tagar, there is ona'ah? So they're one of two possibilities about to argue why the Rabbanan think Rabbi Yehuda is wrong. Either their difference in opinion is a practical situation, which is, do we consider the Tagar to be a Baki, or do we not consider him to be a Baki? Rabbi Yehuda says he's an expert in pricing, and therefore he always knows the price and is making a conscious decision when he overpays or undercharges. On the other hand, the Chachamim believe that a Tagar is not necessarily as big an expert as we are as assuming, and therefore, he can make mistakes in judgment as well. And that's why there is ona'ah for a tagar. Or you could argue that they both agree that the tagar is a baki, and their argument is simply about whether a tagar is mochel or not mochel. Rabbi Yehuda says that he's doing this consciously. Since he's doing this consciously, there is a mechila that is embedded in his overpaying or his undercharging. On the other hand, the Chachamim believe that he doesn't give up that mechila. Even though he's an expert in pricing, that expertise also makes it that he wants to retrieve or to get back that which he was overcharged for or that which he undercharged for. And therefore, you can make a claim, yes, I knew at the time that I was overpaying for it, but I assumed that I bought it and I would get the overage back in the end. I'd go to court and get it back. Or I undercharged knowing because I wanted to move the sale, but I knew in the end that I'd come back and get the real price for it. And so that difference actually might be the machloke between the Rambam and the Ra'aban, as the sheet of the Chachamim. Because the Rambam, in codifying this halacha, he writes, "Kishem shel una'a lehejot, kach una'a letagar, afo pi shehu baki." So the Rambam believes that even though the tagar is a baki, nevertheless, he doesn't forgive or he doesn't waive his rights to collect the una'a. On the other hand, the Ra'aban formulates it this way, "Vafil Rabbanon, lo pligi el bishum disavre the tagar namitoi." That the reason they argue is because they think tagarim also make mistakes. Velo amrinan ozil. And that which Rabbi Yehuda presents over here, which is that it's a conscious effort in pricing, is just not true because they also make mistakes. Ravashi amar, mayin la tagar una'a. Ravashi says, what does it mean that Rabbi Yehuda says that there is no una'a for tagar? Eino bitorat una'a. That he's not in the world of una'a. Shafil pachot mich de una'a chozer. Meaning that he doesn't have the normal breakdown that we saw in yesterday's daf between under a sixth, and above a sixth. And that is because he never forgives or he never waives his right to recapture that which he was underpaid for or recapture that which he overpaid for. Tanya kavate de Rav Nachman. As Rashi explains over here, because im nitane tichayav tluim bekach, this individual who makes his whole livelihood through this trading or selling and buying, therefore the Chachamim instituted on his behalf a protection for him so that he doesn't lose doing this business. So that if he is overcharged or he undercharges, he's able to recoup that so he doesn't lose money or he's not unable to make a living from the business practices that he is in. And therefore they said that even under a sixth for him, the margins are thin and therefore he needs, quote unquote, every penny. And so therefore he doesn't ochel even when it's less than a sixth. So in that case, according to Ravashi, Yehuda would be mekil the gabe the takar rather than being machmir. In the other instance, the way that Rav Nachman explains it is that the tagar doesn't have a din of ona'ah, meaning he doesn't have a right to garner it back even when it is he was overcharged or undercharged. On the other hand, according to the way that Ravashi is explaining it, Rav Yehuda allows the tagar to collect or get back that which he was overcharged for or that he undercharged for, even in cases where it's less than a sixth. Tanya kavoti de Rav Nachman. We have a brayta that supports Rav Nachman's reading of this. Rav Yehuda Meir, tagar in lo onaah mipnei shehu baki. That a tagar doesn't have a din of onaah because he's an expert, which seems to indicate that the reason that there's no onaah over here is because of the expertise of the tagar, and that is supportive of Rav Nachman's reasoning that there is no onaah here. The tagar is quote unquote disadvantaged because he is an expert in pricing and knows and is aware of the fact as to whether he is selling or buying at prices that exceed or are below the market price. And then this goes back to when the Chachamim argue on Rabbi Yehuda. They agree that he is a baki, just that he isn't mochel on the ona'ah. Or do we say that he makes mistakes? And even a baki is not really a baki because of the fact that he could make errors in his judgment as well. Mishu talalav yado el yuna. The person who is aggrieved has the upper hand here to make the decision. Mani matnitin. Who is the author of our Mishnah? Lo Rabbi Natan, v'lo Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Yesterday in the Braita, we saw the positions of Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who argue with regards to a shtut, exactly what were the remedies offered over there. E Rabbi Natan, if you say that Rabbi Natan is the author of this Mishnah, matnitin katani ratza. Our Mishnah says that it's at the option of the aggrieved party. Ubraita lo tani ratza. The other hand, Rabbi Natan yesterday didn't say that you have an option to do what you like. Rabbi Natan simply said that the sale stands and you have to return the ona'ah. So over there, it's a given what happens. Our Mishnah indicates that it's a choice. So it can't be Rabbi Natan. E Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who would seemingly be the more logical choice for the author of the Mishnah, matzitan katani lokeyach. Our Mishnah gives an example of the buyer who was aggrieved. And the Mishnah says if the buyer is aggrieved, he has the choice. Braitoktani mocher. The other in the Braita we saw yesterday, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi said it was about the seller. And the seller is aggrieved, he has the choice. So therefore, how do you reconcile between Rabbi Yehuda Nasi there and our Mishnah, because they're talking about two different aggrieved parties. The Mishnah about the buyer and the Braita about the seller. Amar Rabbi Elazar, ona zo eni oda mishana. And therefore, Rabbi Elazar says about this Mishnah, I don't know who the author of this Mishnah is. Now, either he's implying that there's a third position now. There's a Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Rabbi Natan, and now a third Tano, who is the author of our Mishnah. Or we have to make some sort of emendation, whether to the Braita or to the Mishnah, in order to reconcile and have the authorship be either Rabbi Yehuda Nasi or Rabbi Natan. Rabba Amar, so Rabba says, Olam Rabbi Natan he. He says the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Natan. V'tani nami Braita, and go and emend the Braita to say, Ratzah. He has a choice, meaning that what we saw in the Braita of Rabbi Natan, which seemingly then said that he was locked into the transaction, return the ona'ah, that's not true. Ratzah, he has a choice. The aggrieved party can make the choice as to whether they want to uphold the transaction and get a refund, or whether they want to completely annul the transaction. Then you have to ask, what's the machloka between Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi? And there Rashi explains to us that if you amend the Braita to read this way, then the machlok between them is a belokeach umocher hu depligit. They're arguing whether that right of choice is given to the buyer or to the seller who has been aggrieved. According to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, it is the mocher that is given that opportunity when he is aggrieved. And then according to Rabbi Natan, that opportunity, like our Mishnah says, is given to the buyer. So their machloket is not whether there's a choice. It's a question of who to whom the choice is given. Is it only when the lokeach is aggrieved, or is it only when the mocher is aggrieved? Rav Amar, the Olam Rabbi Yehuda Nasihi, the authorship of our Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Umay Dishir b'matnitan kamefarish b'braita. That which was not explicitly stated in the Mishnah is now explicated upon in the Braita, which is that the Mishnah says that it refers to a buyer, and then he comes along in the Braita and tells you that it's not only by a buyer, but also by a seller, meaning that whoever the aggrieved party is, whether buyer or seller, they have that choice as to whether they annul the sale, or they uphold the sale and get a refund on the ona'ah. So Ravashi dekanami. Ravashi says that the diuk supports Rava's explanation. Diktani echad alokeach ve'echad omocher, because it says both a buyer and a seller. I mean, the Mishnah opens up saying that it's speaking about both a buyer and seller. Mufarsh le'lokeach, but then later on it only explains this choice of the aggrieved party with regards to lokeach. Shmamina shirei shirei le'mocher. So it's clear that it left out the mocher, and that shmamina is what is explicated upon in the Braita on Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, is just saying that both lokeach and mocher are afforded that same right if they were overcharged or underpaid. Now, based on this, Tosafot yesterday says that it's clear from here that you see that Rava thinks Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Because Rava makes the authorship of our Mishnah, Islam Mishnah, like Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. And therefore, how could Rashi claim yesterday that Rava is paskening like Rabbi Natan when we brought the Braita to support him? And that's what led to the sheet of the Rabbeinu Tam, who said that, no, Rava holds like Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, and the Braita was only coming to support the time threshold, that Rava suggests. The Braita shows you that both Rabbi Yehuda Anasi and Rabbi Natan agree that that is the window of opportunity for a retraction. But not to say that Rava holds like Rabbi Natan, rather Rabbi holds like Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, and Halacha should be like Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Itmar. Person transacts with another individual and says that on condition that there will be no ona'a, meaning that there's going to be overcharging or underpaying over here, and the parties agree that they are not going to worry, quote-unquote, about the ona'a. Rav amar yesh lo alav ona'a. Rav says that despite the condition that's made over here, there still is a right to deal with the ona'a based on what the halacha is. Shmuel Amar, in lo alav ona'a. Shmuel says that you have no right then to go and collect it because you agreed to the condition that there would be no collection of ona'a. And even though there was no compelling of the transaction over here and the buyer bought it willingly, Rav nevertheless gives him a right to go get the ona'a back. And that is because he could argue, I couldn't find the object. I needed the merchandise. I had to get it now. So I purchased it at the higher price with the knowledge that I could go and claim the ona'a back later. So just because he agreed to that was maybe to facilitate the sale. Doesn't mean that he's really mochel on the ona'a. He just needs the object, so he's willing to pay the premium now with having in mind that he'll get the premium later. So he agrees to something, even though it's willingly, quote-unquote, that he's agreeing to it. Nevertheless, he might believe that that's not the case, that he will not allow the ona'a to go. He's just agreeing in order to close the sale. Gemara says, Lamer Rav Damarki Rabbi Meir, Ushmuel Damarki Rabbi Yehuda. Let us suggest now that this machloket Rav and Shmuel is similar to a machloket Tanaim that we have between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda that is manifest in the Gemara in Kiddushin, but it has application or broad application. The Tanya, Homer Lisha, Hariat Mikudeshet Li, Amanat Shein Ein Lach, Alai Sher Ksut Vona. Marries the woman on condition that the Torah obligations that a woman is entitled to, including she'er, will translate as mizonot, ksut is clothing, and ona is conjugal rights. So if he says, despite the Torah's requirement that the woman has those rights, I'm going to marry you, but I'm going to be exempt of those rights. Harizo mikudeshet, the condition goes through, utina'o batel, and it's nigh, the condition falls away, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir believes that one may not be one may not make a condition that undermines that which the Torah says. And since here your Tznai undermines the Torah, your Tznai is Batel, the Tznai doesn't exist, and then the Maaseh, the action which is there, still stands because that was a Maaseh, and it's a Chiddush that the Tznai, that the condition can unwind or can limit the action. But if the Tznai is not a valid Tznai, it falls away and the action stands. We spoke about this much more in the Gemara in Kiddushin as to the logic behind that. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, b'davash b'mamon t'na'o kayam. It makes a difference whether we're talking about monetary matters or isurim. What a person may not do is make conditions against isurim of the Torah. You can't permit yourself to violate isurim in the Torah through a condition. But with regards to monetary matters, a person can come to any type of agreement between the two parties. They can decide what the monetary agreement is. The Torah gives you the default situation in these monetary matters. But if the parties want to make it a different transaction or a different relationship, then they're not subject to the quote-unquote rules of the Torah because their transaction now is something different than what the Torah was speaking about. And therefore, as Rashi suggests over here, that the share and the ksut, when it comes to the mizonot, and when it comes to the clothing, which are monetary matters, nitan lemechila, those can be waived. On the other hand, ona, which is conjugal rights, shi'tzara guf, that deals with the personal individual, lo nitan lemechila, that is not, quote-unquote, forgivable. That's not something that can be waived. There are rishonim that believe that that also can be waived, because hanata guf, the pleasure that the body experiences is also a monetary right or a monetary matter. And you can also waive that. So they suggest either that there is a possibility of waiving that right as well. Or they suggest that the reason you can't waive the onah rights is because it's a mitzvah min haTorah. And since onah is a mitzvah, you don't have a right then to undermine it through a tenai, because then it goes or really falls into the category of isur rather than mamon. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have the ability to create conditions in monetary matters. According to Rabbi Meir, you do not, but it goes against the Torah. Ram and Shmuel seemingly are arguing about the exact same point, which is that onah over here, which the Torah restricts, it's a monetary matter, and therefore it would be subject to this machloket of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. And Rav and Shmuel seem to be taking up those positions, which is Rav is ki Rabbi Meir, and Shmuel is ki Rabbi Yehuda. So Amar says, Amar l'charav, ana damri afilu Rabbi Yehuda. I can even hold like Rabbi Yehuda. Adkan lo kamar Rabbi Yehuda hotam. The only reason that Rabbi Yehuda over there, by the case of the marriage, says that the tnai is kayam and it works is el yodo v'kamachlo, because she is aware of it and she waives her right. Aval hocha miyodo demachil. Over here, by ona'a, he has no awareness in order to forgive his rights or to waive his rights. And so the Ramban over here suggests that this is not even an issue in matneo mashakatu b'torah, but simply a din mechila. One can only waive rights when they're aware of the rights that they are waiving. So in the case of kiddushin, they can waive the rights because they have the knowledge as to what they're entitled to. Over here by ona'a, they're not aware of the fact that their rights are being abrogated, and therefore they can't waive or they can't give mechila to that. Whereas the Ritva says, when you are aware of what the Torah entitled you to, then you can waive your right. You can forfeit your right to collect this. On the other hand, if you're not made aware of your rights, then you can't forfeit those rights, because then really the condition is going against the Torah, which is the Torah afforded you a right, and now you're trying to suspend that right without the knowledge of the individual that they're entitled to that right. And therefore it remains an issue of matnei hashemasha katuv b'Torah. Shmuel amar, ana d'amrei afilu l'Rabbi Meir. And Shmuel says, I can even fit into the position of Rabbi Meir. Ad kan lo kamar Rabbi Meir hotam, el devadai ka'akar. Over there, the reason that Rabbi Meir says it doesn't work is because the whole premise of the Kiddushin is to say that I'm not obligated in these items, which the Torah does obligate you in. So you are for certain abrogating the Torah's mitzvah or instruction over here, and that's why it fails. Avahacha, mi yemar deka akre midei. Over here, who says that the Torah's law will be undermined? There's no clear indication that there will be onah. We just make a condition between us that if onah happens, then there will be no claim. But that doesn't mean that there's a guarantee that there will be onah, or that this tenai will necessarily upend or undermine that which is in the Torah. And as the Baal Tosva note over here, there's a simmer machloket with regards to shvi'it. If someone lends money and says that it's on condition that the shvi'it will not subject it to shmitat ksafim, you also have a machloket of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda as to whether that works. Shmuel can make the same statement over there, because who knows that he won't repay it before the shvi'it. The condition is not necessarily automatically or for certain going to abrogate that which the Torah says, because there's a possibility of this being taken care of before there's any violation. And the repayment of the loan prior to shvi'it will then not trigger the necessity for this condition. From this you see that the isur to create a tenai against the Torah is not the inherent tenai itself, but rather when you are, I would call it, being bogeid by Torah, when you are rejecting the Torah, are you doing something that is directly against the instructions of the Torah? That's when the tenai doesn't work. But in cases where it's not obvious, or it's not clear that this would necessarily undermine the din of the Torah, there's no problem with the tenai, because then you don't have this obvious undermining, or absolute undermining, of that which the Torah says. Amar Rav Hanan. So Rav Hanan says, "Di mefarshali minei demar Shmuel." I was explained that which Shmuel said. Homer lechaviro, a person who says almanat shein lecha alai onaah, if he phrases it in the following manner, that it's on condition that you have no onaah claim against me, ein lo alav onaah, then he has no right to go and collect the onaah. Almanat shein bo onaah. On the other hand, if he says that on the condition that there is no onaah here, hariyesh bo onaah, then he is subject to ona'ah. The way that Rashi explains the difference over here is the nature of the claim. If he says, almanat she'en lecha alai ona'ah, means that you're waiving your right to make a claim for the ona'ah. That condition works because then the person's aware of the ona'ah, or the possibility of ona'ah, and he's waiving his right to go then and claim the ona'ah later. On the other hand, when you say ona'ah, she'en bo ona'ah, you're making a claim about the transaction. And if you say there is no ona'ah, and it turns out that there is ona'ah, then not only has the t'nai failed, but it's a mekach ta'ut, because you conditioned the sale on the fact that there was no ona'ah here, and it turns out there was ona'ah. And that's how Rashi explains the difference. Even though, as Tosafot points out, that the Gemara in Makot compares this to a case, amanach lo tishmeteu shvi'it, and the condition that shvi'it doesn't take effect on it, over there you can't make the distinction between waiving a right versus saying that there is no shvi'it, because in both of those cases, it's not in his control. So Tosafot says you have to argue that it's a loose connection. That it's only in a case where he goes to collect the ona'ah. Ish chiluk ben lashon she'en alav l'she'en bo. Hachanami gabi shvi'it ish chiluk ben lashon zeh l'lashon zeh. So too, over here, by shvi'it, the language difference has the same effect. That when you go to collect, then the language difference will be meaningful both by shvi'it and over here, even though the comparison between the two cases is not exact. But for that reason, the Rabbeinu Shmuel, the Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, explains the nature of the problem here differently than Rashi, Mefereish. When you say amanat, it means that the isur of ona'ah will not take effect on this transaction. He doesn't have a right to make that decision. And then it will be exactly like shvi'it. Because when he says amanat she'in bo ona'ah, that's meaning that he's saying the isur will not apply over here. He doesn't have a right to be the determinant of whether the Isur is in effect or not. Whereas when he says, Almanach in Chalai Ona'ah, that is telling him that he has no claim of Ona'ah. Doesn't say anything about the Isur of Ona'ah in the Torah. And then you could compare it to Shvi'it, because you can say the same thing by Shvi'it. If he says, She'ein bo Shvi'it, that the Shvi'it will not be Mishamet Ksafim, he doesn't have a right to tell the Torah whether it will or not be Mishamet Ksafim. On the other hand, if he says, Amanat Shein Nacha Alai Shvi'it, meaning that you don't have a right to utilize that claim, meaning that you're going to waive your right and still pay it after the fact, then that works even by Shvi'it. And according to the Rashbam, the comparison to Shvi'it is exactly alike, because in one instance you're trying to address the Torah's Isur head on. There you don't have a right to do it. Whereas in the other instance, you're just trying to limit the rights that were granted by the Torah. And there you do have a right to ask the person to waive his rights to the entitlements that the Torah gave him. Now, from Anan's statement, it's pretty clear that he believes that Shmuel holds like Reb Yehuda, because the reasoning behind Shmuel's position now has to do with the way that he phrases the T'nai, but underlying that is a permissibility to create the T'nai as long as it's worded in the proper manner. And therefore, his position is definitely then akin to Reb Yehuda's position, and won't fit into Rabbi Meir, because we're no longer determining based on whether it will or will not happen, but rather based on the language that's used, even though it's absolutely certain that it will happen. And so, according to Rav Anan, it's pretty clear that Shmuel holds like Rabbi Yehuda's position. And that is the sheet of the Ramban, although the Ritva indicates that Ein Hachanami, that you could explain it even according to Shmuel, that even though Rav Anan's explanation fits into the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda better, nevertheless, he could still say it within the position of Rabbi Meir. Meitave, hanosevin atein ba'amana, someone who transacts based on trust. Va'omer l'chaveiro, amanat she'en l'cha alai ona'ah, or a person conditions a transaction by which there will be no claim of ona'ah in this transaction. Ein lo alav ona'ah. In that instance, there is no ona'ah. So as far as the second case is concerned, that is what we've been speaking about until now, which is the person stipulated specifically that there would be no claim of ona'ah in this transaction. The first part of the braita, which says, I know save and obtain by amanah, it's not clear what the case is and what it is how it is relevant to ona'ah. Rashi says the case here is that he gives it to an individual, machor b'mashetuchal, go ahead and sell it for whatever you can. He hands him merchandise to go and fetch a price and to sell it on his behalf. And he says, pay me back the money at a certain date. I give you an amount of time to go and do that. And then he pays him a fee or service fee for the fact that he's selling the object. And Rashi says, v'inine somech alecha, I rely on you to get the fairest price for this object. So then Rashi claims over there, ein lo alav ona'ah, means that neither party here can make a claim not the seller who sent it with this individual to sell on his behalf to say you sold it below market price make up the differential. And neither can the seller say I sold it above market. I should be able to keep the differential because he's acting as shlucho, as his agent. And therefore, there's no quote unquote ona'ah here because of the fact that whatever price is garnered really is accrued to the person who sent them, the principal who sent the merchandise. Tosafot is very critical of this explanation of Rashi because he says, I don't really see what this has to do with ona'ah at all. And therefore, he brings another possibility, which is venira denosim v'notein b'amana, haynu sh'amino b'kama kana. He believes him or trusts him what the cost of the item is. V'notein lo kach yeoter ma'at. He pays him that amount plus more, or what otherwise is known as cost plus. He says, what was your cost? I'll add on a margin for you, and I will pay you for that. Now, when they find out later on that the market price was different than the cost that he paid, then he has no right to make a claim of ona'ah, because the premise of the transaction had nothing to do with where the market price was, but rather about his cost. So therefore, when he gave him a cost plus, the guy was honest with him about what the cost was. He never represented that his cost was at market, above market, or below market, and therefore this person has no claim of ona'ah on that. That is the case that's being described by Nosim Notein Ba'amana in this braita. Now the question is, this braita is problematic for Rav, because the Rav, Damar, Ana Da'amre Afilu Rav Yehuda, Hamani. Rav who says in the end that even Rav Yehuda holds like me, then who's the author of this braita? Because he says that there is no Tana that believes that ona'ah, you can make a condition or stipulation that will allow you to waive ona'ah. He says, Rabbi Meir certainly doesn't say it. And even Rabbi Huda, who says you're allowed to make a t'nai, that's only in the case where you're aware and you can be mochel. But over here, where there's no awareness of it, he couldn't be mochel. And therefore, even Rabbi Huda agrees that you can't waive it. So who's the author of this braita? Amar Abaye mecharvarta, Rav tika amar ke Rabbi Meir. This Rav says, it must be, or it's clear that Rav holds like Rabbi Meir. Shmuel da'amar ki Rabbi Yehuda, and Shmuel holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Now, the only thing that was compelled over here, really, based on this braita, was the fact that Rav held like Rabbi Meir. The fact that Shmuel holds like Rabbi Yehuda is not necessarily compelled from this braita. If you hold like the Ramban, that Rav Anan's statement about what Shmuel's position was forced you to say that Shmuel holds like Rabbi Yehuda, then this statement is understandable because from the statement of Rav Anan, plus this braita, you'd come to the conclusion that Rav holds like Rabbi Meir, and Shmuel holds like Rabbi Yehuda. On the other hand, like the Ritva, who explained that even in Rav Anan, you could still explain it to Rabbi Meir, it's not really clear here why you're compelled to say that Shmuel holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Amar lo kasha, kan bistam, kan bimifarish. Though there's a difference whether you are explicit about the waiving of the amount, versus a case where there is no stipulation. D'tanya, b'med varmim amorim. When is this true? Bistam, when it is a transaction without any indications. Aval b'mifareish mocher, when the seller is explicit about the ona'ah that is here. Shamar lelokeach, he says to the buyer, chefet zesh ani mocher lecha b'matayim. This object which I'm selling to you for 200, yodei ani bo she'enu shaveh l'manet. I know it's only worth 100. And then he stipulates specifically that you have no right of ona'ah claim there. Then there is no ona'ah. Because in that case, the disclosure of the information makes it that yodo machil. He knows about it, and now he is mochel. Unlike what we said before, where Rabbi Yehuda would not necessarily agree to the position of Shmuel according to Rav, because Rabbi Yehuda says that the case of Tanai by Kiddushin is a case where he has information and is mochel. But in a case of ona'ah, where there isn't such information, then he wouldn't be mochel. But here we basically have created a case within ona'ah, whereby the disclosure makes it exactly similar to kiddushin. And therefore, when he waives that right of retrieval for the right to collect the ona'ah, then he knows what he's being mochel on. V'chein, and the same is true in reverse. This object, which I'm buying from you for 100, I know the merchandise is worth 200, but I'm paying you 100. So you see, even within the position of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda distinguishes between a case of stam, where you don't have any yediyah, and therefore there's no mechila, and therefore according to Rav, you would say that Rabbi Yehuda believes that it doesn't work, versus the case of mifaresh, where then it becomes akin to the case of kiddushin, where everything is stipulated and out in the open. And over there, he has a right or the ability to waive the ona'ah. Now, Rashi over here makes the point to note that Shepesh Lecha Yodan Yishyesh ona'ah. He does not say that he has to specify the exact amount of the ona'ah. He just has to specify that there definitely is ona'ah in the transaction. Whereas from the example brought in the Braita, it would seem much more along the lines of what the Rambam does when he codifies it and says that you have to specify the amount of ona'ah that is taking place here in order for it to be subject to mechila. Now, based on this, you can see the Rabbeinu Chananel, this is the end of what we have of the Rabbeinu Chananel's Perush in Bava Metzia, and then he says, Mekaimelan k'Rav Yisurei, we generally pass them like Rav when it comes to a machloket Rav and Shmuel b'Yisurim, ve'ona'ah asirei, and ona'ah is an Yisur. And therefore, if ona'ah is an Yisur, if machloket Rav and Shmuel, we're going to pass them like Rav. And seemingly the Braita is supportive of Rav because the explanation of the reason Rabbi Yehuda differentiates between Stam and Mifaresh is only a reason that makes sense under Rav's explanation of the sugya. According to Shmuel, Rabbi Yehuda should be matir in all cases. Why is there a distinction between Stam and Mifaresh? The Balei Tosafot take issue with this psak of the Rabbeinu Chananel because he says, I'm not sure that you're right about the machloka here between Rav and Shmuel being about Isure. Rav and Shmuel simply argue that when someone waives their right to collect ona'ah, whether that works or it doesn't work, neither of them comment as to the permissibility of doing such a thing. And that's what he says over here. Tema, da'alo plige im mutar lasot kein. They're not arguing about whether it's allowed or not allowed to do such a thing. Elo plige im chayav lachzir ona'ah. They only argue about whether you have to return the ona'ah or not. And therefore, it's a issue of choshen mishpat, not yoredeya. And that's what we discussed in yesterday's daf, that ona'ah really is comprised of two different issues. There's a yoredeya issue, which is whether it's mutar or asur to overcharge or underpay for an object. And we discussed that under a sixth, whether that is asur or mutar, even though it may be subject to mechila. There's a separate question of a choshen mishpat question, which is that when the person is in violation of ona'ah, what is their obligation to return it, or what is the standing of the transaction? And what the Balei Tosafot are pointing out is that Rav and Shmuel's machloket is simply a choshen mishpat issue. They're not arguing about the permissibility of doing it. They're arguing about if it was done, then what is the choshen mishpat implications of that? And therefore, the Balei Tosafot say, not like the Rabbeinu Chananel, that this is an issue of Isur, and therefore the halacha should be Rav, but it's rather an issue of Dinei. And when it comes to Dinei or Mimonot, we say that Rav Shmuel halacha kishmuel b'Dinei. And therefore, the Balei Tosafot think that the halacha should be like Shmuel in this case. Whereas the She'utot Rav Achai paskins like Rav because of what I had mentioned before, that the Braita is supportive of his position. The Rivan in the Balei Tosafot gives a way to explain the Braita even according to Shmuel, which would then allow them to paskin like Shmuel and not like Rav in this instance. Tanu Rabbanan, Hanosev Notein Ba'amana. So another case where a person is Nosev Notein Ba'amana, Harzeh Lo Yechashev Et Ara Ba'amana. He shouldn't do the bad stuff on trust, but yafeh b'shaveh, and the good stuff based on the market price. Elo ozeh b'zeh ba'amana, both of them are either done on trust, ozeh b'zeh b'shaveh, or they're both done at the market price. The way that Rashi explains the case here, it's a case where he has wine to sell. He has really good wine, and he has wine that is not so good. The good wine can be sold immediately. So if he gives it to an individual to sell on his behalf, the person will be able to monetize the good wine immediately. Whereas with regards to the wine that is not so good, it'll take him time to sell it. So what the individual says to him is, listen, I'm not going to pay you to sell the items here. What I want you to do is, I want you to take my good wine and my bad wine, and I want you to sell it. Now, when you sell the good wine, you're going to be able to monetize it immediately. That means that you have cash, that you have money in hand. You'll be able to borrow that money or use that money until you finish selling the stuff that is not as liquid or easy to sell. So you'll be able to hold on to that cash until then. Then when you've sold out the less good stuff, then you'll give me back all the money together. Or in essence, what he's doing is he's lending him money on the good wine because he's able to monetize it immediately, and then allowing him time to dispose of the less good wine. But then he's not paying him for that. Normally, you would have to pay someone to sell this on your behalf. The fact that he's not paying from that is basically an interest charge. He is charging him for the fact that he's holding on to the money at that point in time and saying, listen, since you are able to hold my money and borrow it for that period of time, I'm not going to pay you any fee. The fee, or the equivalent of the fee, is the fact that you're getting to keep the money over that period of time. So basically, it's imputed interest because of the fact that the lending of money, he is now not paying a normal service fee. So that's the waiving of that service fee is the equivalent of paying interest on the loan. So Rashi says you can't do this, but rather you must either have everything be delayed and you have to pay him a service fee, or you have the good stuff be sold right away and he gives you the money back right away. And the other stuff, he takes time to sell it and you pay him a fee for it. But you can't have one subsidizing the other because it looks like then you're charging him interest. The Baalei Tosafot, once again, don't love Rashi's explanation over here because of the fact that that is an issue of ribit and not ona'ah. So then what's it doing in our Gemara over here, not in the Perek of Ezu Neshech? And therefore, the Baalei Tosafot suggests that the case here is a case where a person buys 10 items for 10 dinar. So now, half of the items are really worth half a dinar. The other half of the items are really worth 1.5 dinar. So in totality, the bundle is worth 10. So the guy bought it for 10. Then he hands it over to someone else to sell. And he says to him, okay, as far as the bad merchandise, which was really worth a half, that I'm going to charge you a dinar for. You're going to have to pay me back a dinar. The good stuff that I give you, that I'm going to charge you a dinar and a half for. I'm going to charge you the real price. So on one of them, he's charging the bundled price for the bad stuff. And then with regards to the good stuff, he's charging him the market price. So in essence, he's overcharging him because he's not using the same method of valuation for both parts of the transaction. And that's why it's ona'ah over here. It could be subject to ona'ah because of the fact that he should either tell him that everything is a dinar and give him the bundled price, or everything is based on the market price and you get paid half a dinar for the lower quality merchandise, and you pay a dinar and a half for the better quality merchandise. But he can't have the best of both worlds, because otherwise it looks like ona'ah. V'notein lo schar katef. And then when someone sells on your behalf, then you have to pay him the cost of moving the merchandise from where it is to where he's going to sell it. Schar gamal, if it's not enough that he carries it or schleps it, but he needs actually like a moving truck, a gamal, to do it, you have to compensate him for that. Schar bundak, if he has to go and stay overnight or sleep in a hotel in order to facilitate the selling of the items, you also have to reimburse it for that. So you have to reimburse all of his expenses. Schar etzmo ain't an hotel. On the other hand, in terms of wages for doing the selling that he does not get, shvar natan lo scharo mishulam, because he already gave him his full payment. Scharo mishulam mehechika yoivde. Where did he get paid over here? All we're seeing here is reimbursement for expenses. Where is the salary or the wage for selling on his behalf? Amra papa bitzdruye darvi arba lemeya. It's a case of struye, which is similar to what we saw before in the beginning of today's daf with regards to the tzadraita of the Baalei Batim, which were these big day canvas that they're selling. Rashi translates the same thing over here, mochrei big day canvas, that they have a fixed fee for selling it, and that they get 4 to 100 or 4% of the sale is their fee. So they're going to get a sales fee of 4%. So incorporated in that sales fee is the wages for this individual. And then the expenses are above and beyond that, and you have to reimburse him for the expenses. So the way that you do this, when you give someone merchandise to sell on your behalf on commission, they will get a 4% commission in this particular type of merchandise for selling it. That will be their wages. And then they'll get reimbursed for expenses, so that you are, in essence, giving him a fair price for the merchandise, and he's selling it at a fair price, and he earns his wages through the commission that he earns over here. Because otherwise, it will start to look like ona'ah in this case, because if he doesn't reimburse his expenses, and he doesn't pay him a fee, then in essence, what he's doing is that he's selling this material to this individual at too high a price, then that individual is going and selling them at the market price. And so you're overcharging him for the materials. If you don't separate out, or you don't give him a fee for his services, then in essence, what you're doing is embedding and overcharging in the merchandise that you're giving him, and then it would be subject to ona'ah. So once you separate out his fee as well as his reimbursement of expenses, then the items are sold at market price. He sells them at market price, and he gives you back that market price, and then you'll earn your margin. Out of that margin, you pay him his fees and the reimbursement of his expenses. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Nun Aleph Amud Bet.